direction. We're putting on the dress of evil, and we may want to stop our ears. We may want to wish we could, but we have to realize that's no longer possible, and that's why the protests in Seattle erupted. That's why the protests in Genoa erupted. That's why people are banding together and saying, I'm not going to live my life with my eyes open, with my eyes closed. There's no reason to. We have more than enough food on the planet to feed everybody. We have the technology to end so much human suffering. It's only stupidity that would allow us in this generation to continue to allow poverty to continue. And
greed, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Or even just the inertia of doing what's always been done in the past.
Yeah. To do nothing is to perpetuate the evil.
But getting back to Santa Monica and the big issue, what happened here, as I understand it, was that there were some highly placed NASNA folks, and among them Michael Stoops and Tim Harris. Tim runs a newspaper in Seattle called Real Change. Michael is the, I think he's the executive director, or certainly one of the prime activists in the National Coalition for the Homeless, who did want the big issue is, you know, involved. And actually, when NASNA, the majority, voted to support Making Change, Jennifer Wagner's paper, not just Jennifer Wagner's paper, it was a number of other people's, you know, efforts. I think she was the editor. To keep the big issue out, or to tell the big issue, you're violating your own charter by coming in here without discussing it with the other papers. You're a member of the group called the INSP, the International, I don't know, it's an international newspaper group that actually the big issue formed, and then had all these fine, fancy principles about how they're not going to violate each other's territories and markets, and not going to, you know, they seem to be violating their own concern. And they said, well, I don't know, Making Change wasn't a member of the INSP or some such thing. They had their excuses. But Making Change in that time, and I mean, the NASNA in 97 came out against supporting small papers like Making Change, because that's
very much to the credit of the work of Jennifer Wagner. And she's definitely led the fight and deserves a tremendous amount of credit for successfully battling the big issue, showing it can be done. I think what happens a lot of times is these big corporate sponsors come in, people with money come into a group of homeless people, and everybody immediately falls down and starts worshiping them to the blessing of us all. Jennifer Wagner, the iconoclast, refused to bow down, and has put up a tremendously vociferous fight that has inspired a lot of people within NASNA and around the country to maybe realize, hey, wait a minute, maybe I ought to have a backbone too. And so there's lessons we all need to learn from one another if we're going to unite to fight homelessness on Earth.
Well, actually, I have to take a somewhat different view. I didn't see Jennifer leading the fight. I saw her temporizing, going to the big issue, making deals with them. Essentially, there were a bunch of us who did want to fight the big issue, including the head of Street Spirit, Terry Messman, the head of the Coalition on Homelessness San Francisco paper, Street Sheet, the head of the New York paper, India Washington, and Burnside Cadillac when it was operational in Portland, Oregon. Now it's been succeeded by another good paper, Street Roots. Sharon Pearson was the head of Burnside Cadillac. All of us were concerned that we had to stand up and enforce the NASNA prohibition. Instead, Jennifer, under the sponsorship of Tim Harris, met with John Byrd, arranged a deal with John Byrd, who's the head of the big issue, and got some pitiful payoff in terms of, some minor office space. They were still fighting months later. She wasn't getting the computer or whatever she wanted. It was not a particularly good deal, but it gave the other NASNA members who were being manipulated by Harris and Stoops the impression that this whole deal was being, you know, that there was some understanding being reached, and the big issue was responding and acknowledging the concerns of NASNA. But in fact, I was on the subcommittee that was supposed to get information on the big issue, about the broader issue, about what were the impact of the big issue, what was its impact when it came into a country where there, you know, or a city where there was a homeless paper, how had this worked in the past, what percentage of their profits actually went to homeless people, what power do they have in the organization. These questions were continually left unanswered by Bird, who eventually, I don't think the big issue's actually gotten into NASNA yet, because these questions were not answered. But that was not because for any lack of, Harris and Stoops were big advocates for the big issue, and they're all, I'm not saying that they're bad people. I disagree with their position on this. They also did some pretty fancy shifty shit at the executive committee level, barring people from discussions, cutting out critics, and doing things of the sort. And there are other controversies that have arisen there. The problem with Jennifer here in Santa Monica, and she won't like hear me saying this, though I have a lot of respect for her and affection for her work over the last 10 years. That doesn't just include this newspaper. It includes, as you know, fighting for housing for homeless people, fighting for civil rights for homeless people on the streets of Santa Monica, as Harris has done as well in Seattle, as Michael Stoops has done as well nationally, as part of the organization of the National Coalition for the Homeless. So I just wanted to add that because I always, my bullshit alarm goes
like
off.
Like you say, it's like it's often said, a lot of people want to criticize progressive movements or grassroots movements, and one of the biggest criticisms you always hear from people on the sidelines is, oh, I wish they'd just stop fighting among themselves and do something. Well, there's no game without struggle, and I think all of us that are engaged in these struggles feel that more strongly than anybody standing by the sidelines. And but the fact is we as activists, when we involve ourselves in a cause, when we involve ourselves in a fight, we need to realize that we need to have ourselves continually undergoing some self-examination and some self-criticism. If we're not going to have a movement, a grassroots movement, without some self-examination and without space for this kind of dialogue that we're having now, and where we can, without being accused of attacking one another, sit down and say, okay, these are issues that we hold dearly, that we're putting our blood and our sweat into fighting, and we take different stands on them. It's more important that we be able to sit back also at the same time and dispassionately say, what is it that we're fighting over, and let's get beyond the personal feelings and recognize that we have to set those aside at times to look at the underlying issues and get away from the personalities. And that also gives you the ability that after a fight is over, you can all learn from it, and you find yourself in new agreement with people who you didn't know how much you agreed with them before, or you find how different your viewpoint is from people who you thought you agreed with. That's part of the struggle of a grassroots movement for social change.
Now, what about the issues, these new issues, or the old issues that have come up again? I asked you about this, I guess, a moment ago, or 15 minutes ago, who knows. Santa Monica City Council, probably not as important, is certainly not as important as homeless people on the streets in terms of the future of Santa Monica. But what is happening as far as homeless people go? What is happening with the Santa Monica City Council here? I know that you had a mayor, so-called green mayor, Michael Feinstein, who made us all green about the gills. What's the story?
Well, if you ask what's going on with the Santa Monica City Council regarding homelessness, the answer is a big nothing.
Is that good or bad? I mean, they are not succumbing to police pressure to criminalize sleeping in a vehicle, right?
Considering the so-called reputation of the city as being progressive, you have to conclude that the bad outweighs whatever good. It's tremendously evil when the people have the resources to take a stand, refuse to do so, and think that there might be some long-term gain. You have to know in a battle where it is that you take a strong stand and where it is you compromise. And one of the biggest battles over homeless issues takes place in these so-called progressive cities like Madison, like Santa Cruz, like Santa Monica, like West Hollywood. And The fact is that these are not the communities to be spineless. These are not the communities to back down. These are the communities that know better. And
these are the communities that are touting the Giuliani model in New York.
Yeah, and these are the communities where if you're an activist, you have no excuse for taking the easy route. And yet, the inverse seems to be true. I think progressive communities is a place where homeless activists are the laziest. It's amazing to me, you go into a conservative campus or conservative community, I'll give you a quick example, Pepperdine in Malibu, where Kenneth Starr was recently appointed to the faculty, you find some of the most energetic, clear-thinking, committed, progressive activists on a campus like Pepperdine in tremendously greater and more inspiring numbers than you do on a so-called liberal campus like UCLA. People who walk the talk, and that's what we need. The most dangerous thing in America today might be a liberal or a progressive who walks their talk instead of just talks the walk. We're sick to death of people talking the walk.
What's happening specifically in Santa Monica? Give us the last update of the last few years as to how the Santa Monica City Council has been yapping and not walking, or what's it been doing?
Well, we're touted all over the country for having two members of the Green Party on our city council.
Who are they?
Michael Feinstein and Kevin McEwen. And when it comes to homeless, a lot of homeless people were actually involved on the grassroots level of getting, with a lot of hope, Mike Feinstein into office, for instance. And what we found is when these fellows took office, they immediately became very powerful forces for building a national Green Party, but very weak forces for fighting for homeless justice in Santa Monica. What you get in a lot of progressive communities from so-called progressive politicians is nothing more than a promise of, well, I'll work behind the scenes for you, but I can't take a stand. It's as if they have a sudden surgery to remove all their vertebra.
Well, I thought that Feinstein was even worse than that. I mean, am I wrong? He hasn't championed any anti-homeless measures. He's sort of simply not stood up. What's his?
I'd like to know a single homeless, a single improvement for the homeless community that Mike Feinstein or Kevin McEwen or any person on the Santa Monica City Council has brought forward, let alone championed, in the last 8 years. It just hasn't happened.
What about the wonderful social service programs of Santa Monica? We always hear about Santa Cruz, how wonderful the social service programs are, and how these homeless malcontents are only causing people to get all upset, and you know, there'll be a magnet effect because everybody in the world will come to Santa Cruz / Santa Monica if they allow people basic civil rights. And therefore, why don't people just shut up and appreciate the fact that, you know, if you're living in a fancy seaside community, you can't expect to have a free lunch here, buddy. You know, everybody wants to be here, so pay your way or get out.
To the executives of Enron or the executives of MGM or the executives of Sony, which MGM and Sony are located here in Santa Monica, or the executives of the RAND Corporation, which is also located here in Santa Monica. This has got to be one of the nerve centers of global evil.
Right, but that would say, taking again the devil's position here, Mr. Evil.
Corporate evil. I mean, let's call it what it is, corporate.
But that isn't relevant to the homeless situation in the sense that...
I am getting a little excited.
Yeah, well, you're just mad corporate. Your attacks on our founding fathers or our abusive uncles, whatever you want to call them.
That's right.
Enron was one of the founding fathers, weren't they?
How have we forgotten?
Thomas Jefferson, wasn't Enron the signature right below Hancock?
These guys, they pay for their palaces here in beautiful Santa Monica and Santa Cruz, insofar as they are their brothers and sisters are in the towns. If you don't like it, you know, if you can't afford it here in Santa Monica, you expect the city council to give you a free ride, buddy?
No. In the 10 years I've been homeless, I've never taken a government a check. And I've never begged for money. What I have done is recycled parts of the food that America throws away by not wasting it.
You work with food, not bombs?
Food, not bombs. And all the cash that I've raised by being a part of a homeless newspaper cooperative where I haven't been putting cash in my pocket at the expense of spreading greedy corporatism. So, no, I haven't gotten a free lunch.
Yeah, but you're saying they haven't done anything in 8 years. What should they do? Just, you know, give away more social service, goodies to homeless people to encourage all these mobs to come in from Venice and Los Angeles to overrun the city and produce chaos, anarchy, and no doubt new terrorist cells?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll give you a couple of quick facts about Santa Monica to kind of clarify for everybody. It might be useful to the listeners. Santa Monica has, again, as I said earlier, a population of 86,000 people. Has 1,000 homeless people. The national average for homeless people is 1 to 3%, according to official statistics. Just going by those conservative official statistics, Santa Monica is not a magnet for homeless people. It has about the national average of homeless people.
Just because of the vigilant attitude of the city council in not dispersing civil rights to every Tom, Jane, or Betty who comes in.
Well, just for the moment there, I just presented to your listeners the barest, minimalist thing that even the most ignorant person might consider to be Santa Monica's fair share of homeless people. But again, if you want to talk about how many homeless should there be in Santa Monica, if we're talking about a city where people, where a corporation like Rand Corporation, which develops policy for the United States military, which controls this planet, I'd have to argue with you, if you're living in a city that controls the planet, as people living in Los Angeles and New York clearly do, the appropriate number, anything less, if there's homeless people on Earth, if half the people on this Earth are homeless, if there are homeless people have to be anywhere, the appropriate number of homeless people for these communities that control the Earth would be the global level of homelessness. So if half the people are on Earth are homeless, I think if you look at the logic, you have to conclude that if these cities, if half the residents of these cities aren't themselves also homeless, these cities are excluding, they're dealing with their fair share of the problem.
You have such beautiful views here, you know.
No, that ain't a beautiful view. Now, it's an ugly view, but it's an ugly fact.
We've got lovely, lovely seascapes here that people pay good money to come and live in, and you want these people to trash up their neighborhoods and just cause difficult situations. Why don't you move to East L.A.?
Robert, I'm a conservative. Because I believe in one of the most bedrock conservative values, responsibility. There is no free lunch. You're right. But who is it that wants the free lunches? It's the rich, the greedy, the movie stars, the media stars, the corporate executives. What working person gets a free lunch? What executive gets a free lunch? Executives won't even show up for lunch unless it's free.
Santa Monica has done nothing for homeless people in the last 8 years. What should they have done and what should they do?
Well, we have 1,000 homeless people, 400 of them are still on the street. We've had 1,000 homeless people for over 10 years. You'd think in 10 years, one of the richest tourist cities in the country could come up with an open field or a warehouse where people could put out a cot. They should build minimum another 400 shelter bed. Shelter, minimum. Provide 3 meals a day.
Wait a minute, that's a free lunch. You told us we don't want no free lunches here, man.
What's a free lunch to a 40-year-old man or woman who spent 20 years slaving for a corporation to be told, oh, you're too old now to work at Denny's. You're too old to work at our Gap store. We're not going to pay your dental care, but now you've lost your teeth for working for our kind of company for 10 lunch for everybody on this planet. Who's paid for it?
Isn't that a free lunch?
No, it's an earned lunch.
So, let's jump now, since I'm running out of tape, to your work in dealing with particular recent civil rights violations. For example, the infamous no loitering sign controversy you talked about on the radio a month or two ago. You want to kind of sum that up, what that was about, and how you won, actually, I think, a significant, if small, victory.
I think one of the biggest lessons that I've learned when I decided to fight the fight instead of just standing on the sidelines as a citizen of this country is that truth comes wherever you let it open. And although I've been a part of planning a lot of demonstrations in the last 4 years in Los Angeles and Santa Monica, the most profound and some of the most powerful activist things that I've done have been things that were never planned, that just happened by being a person who decides to walk their talk. And a year ago, I was sitting on the sidewalk in front of the homeless drop-in center eating a muffin that I'd salvaged from a dumpster. Because
no free lunch here.
I didn't get it from the homeless drop-in center. A police officer came along, pulled up his vehicle next to me on the curb, rolled down his window, leaned out his head, looked at me without even saying hello. What are you doing? How long you been here? And a guy who'd never seen me before in his life, who, because he had a badge and a uniform, felt that he had the perfect right to stick his head out the window and say, okay, buddy, time to move along, which happens to be unconstitutional. And I knew that, and I pointed out to him, and he ensued an argument with me. So I ended up being arrested for sitting on the sidewalk, eating a muffin, something that any 10-year-old, 5-year-old, or 6-year-old in this country, or most adults, would be amazed to find out you can be arrested for.
You were really arrested,
but not most homeless people.
You were really arrested for disputing the authority of a police officer, of course.
The actual charges were leaving property on the sidewalk, leaving property on a sidewalk and camping. I was accused of camping for sitting on a sidewalk.
That muffin munching activity looks pretty threatening to some.
Yeah, they must have thought that under the city's camping ordinance, you have to erect, maintain, or occupy a living accommodation. They must have thought I was going to crawl into that muffin and sleep.
Muffin man.
Yeah. But so the long short of it is that after 4 months of trying to hound me into a plea bargain agreement, which anybody who deals with crime in the courts knows is the generally way that they deal with the oppressed, they want you to plead guilty and accept their lesser punishment, I stood on my innocence and won, and I'm about to make a federal case in Santa Monica over a muffin robbery. I have a wonderful civil rights lawyer who's helping me.
And what is the nature of this claim you're going to make and the path you're going to follow?
It's going to be a simple false arrest claim. But part of the thing that you do, if you get arrested and you fight these things, you file, in order to get damages for the wrong that's been done to you, you first have to file a claim with the city. That's your first step. Even your law, if you hire a lawyer, that's the first step. You have to offer a settlement. You have to file a claim for damages with the city. I filed a claim for damages with the city, which they denied. But just filing the claim was worthwhile because the day after I filed the claim, they sent two police officers from the homeless harassment team around the city and put a big red duct tape over the word loitering on every publicly posted no loitering sign in the city of Santa Monica. So I challenge anybody who says you can't fight City Hall. You can lose and you can win, because I've lost my claim, but we've gotten some corrections in the signage, and the battle isn't over yet.
Wow. The war
isn't over yet. You can lose the battle and win the war.
When did these no loitering signs go up?
They went up about a year and a half ago. So they've been sticking in a lot of people's craw for about a year now.
We have a similar fantasy in Santa Cruz where they have the word no trespassing or loitering in these alcoves, which are, they posted in various places up and down Pacific Avenue, the main street in Santa Cruz, which is being gentrified and transformed into a yuppie playground in the eyes of some of us, although some think it's not that serious. Loitering, however, is a term that essentially bit the dust in 1982 or 83 when, as you and I mentioned before, Edward Larson, we mentioned it a couple months ago on the air, successfully challenged a bunch of police stops because he was an African-American, running at night or something, or running in his neighborhood, and they kept asking him for ID, and he kept saying, you know, no.
You know, I know Edward. I've met him, and I know his case really well. Edward Larson, a hero for civil rights in America, lives here in Santa Monica, and he was a homeless man when he won, you know, when he established the right that people don't have to show ID to cops just because they want you to. But whether he was running, I don't know. I do know he was arrested 14 times before, and he persevered through 14 arrests and all of that to win a historic battle in the United States Supreme Court. He's a hero to this generation.
He was doing some writing, wasn't he? He wrote a publication for a while, had a foundation or an organization, not a foundation, that he was a part of. Not sure. Because I talked to him 10 years ago, I think. Love to get an interview with him. Maybe you can try to
set one address here this morning before you go.
And we can, you know, break into his house and interview him. Excuse me, Edward.
Edward's working in a vegan cooking institute right now, so he continues the struggle to make the world a better place. Where were we?
Well, we're reaching the end of the tape, unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately for those who are getting tired of this, although I find this a very interesting interview. You are...
Historians will pick over it.
Hey, history is being made. You are, you know, we're talking about David Busch, who's an activist concerned with the civil rights for everybody, and I guess the broader and more profound civil rights of people getting a fair share of the earth, and at least having their work and their in life be given the value that it's due. And this has put you in a position where you walk around. I saw you last night with a little sign. Unhoused, and you, any comments on that?
Well, Robert Shearer, columnist for the LA Times, somehow or another, somebody must have said something to him about me, because about a year ago, my name popped up in the Los Angeles Times for being homeless and walking the liberal talk instead of flapping the liberal lip. I was called a performance artist, so performance artist, activist, person can live a full life even if you're homeless.
Remember Robert Shearer from his Berkeley days, but that's another story. Again,
Robert won't talk to me, but I'll thank him for the kind words.
Using your name in his column to pay his own bills.
Corporate behavior.
Yeah, that looks that way. This is Robert Norris in Santa Monica talking with David Busch on March 2nd, 2002 in beautiful, the only one in Santa Monica, Denny's Restaurant. Back to you.
And that was David Busch, actually, as he calls, to distinguish himself from our national Georgia Busch. Bush is Bush League, and Bush is up there with the greats, as far as I'm concerned. At least I really admired some of the things he's done, including successfully challenged bigotry in restaurant in Venice, California. We actually played that interview a month ago, and you can read about it in Street Spirit. Becky Johnson did a fine piece on it, and you can read about it in the current issue as it hits the streets. Again, available from the Homeless Services Center and the Page Smith Community House, as well as, if you wish to distribute Street Spirit, give a call to Becky Johnson at 429-8529. You can sell them if you're homeless or near homeless and keep the profits, or if you just want to get a copy to look at, she'll get you one, and you just have to kick down a dollar to a homeless person sometime the ensuing day on the streets. Scout's honor, got to give your word. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Bathrobe's Pierre Robert Norris. This is a 3.5-hour show, runs from 10 to 1:30, It's 15 after 12, not 15 after 11. Daylight savings time is gone. It's here. The standard time is gone. So ratchet forward your clocks. We're going to now try to reach the local civil rights attorney, Kate Wells, who is taking this lawsuit for me. She actually expressed interest in it. And that's the one about the city council. And we're going to try to see what she's up to on some other fronts. She said she might be in today. So we're going to kind of hope we can catch her before she hops off into the...
Kate Wells.
Hey.
Yeah, Free Radio Santa Cruz has you on the line here.
Okay.
And what are you up to? What's going on? I understand you're pursuing your usual kind of bad guys in blue suits with badges.
Yeah, I just filed another case against the infamous Officer Murphy in Capitola. So
now, why is he infamous? Are you surely you don't want to be too hard on dear Officer Murphy? He makes a few mistakes, perhaps.
Oh my! Yeah, you play such a good devil's advocate, and I do mean devil in this case. Yeah, he's. You know, the man may at times be just a stellar individual. However, he has a temper that he obviously cannot get under control. And, you know, if he were an accountant or a, several other professions, I guess it wouldn't matter so much. But he does... have license to carry a gun, and he does have license to shoot, and so it's not as if he's just going to screw up your books, you know. He's going to...
Has he ever shot anyone?
Not that I'm aware.
But so you have how many lawsuits involving him going?
I have four going, and one other woman who will be a witness for us who is afraid to take action.
And what exactly... do you feel, or are you persuaded, Murphy has done that requires you to take these cases to federal court, right?
Well, I generally take them to federal court because we avoid the good old boy kind of system that pervades in the local courts.
Well, now, surely you're not criticizing Judge Samuel Stevens or that fine Judge Yance or Barracuda Barton? Come on.
You're not gonna suck me into...
Wait a minute. Many Faces McAdams is one of my favorite justices here in local courts. And, of course, Kangaroo Kelly, he's an old favorite.
The situation is this. Federal judges are appointed for life. They could care less about a bunch of cops in Santa Cruz. It's not as if it's going to, you know, hurt their career in any way. So
now, wait a minute. Are you suggesting that meat grinder Mulligan eats lunch with the cops? How can you say such a thing?
Yeah. no comment.
Yeah. So you do take the cases to federal court. Officer Murphy has got four, count them, four pending cases from you?
Four pending cases from me.
And what has Murphy done that requires he be, should we say, sanctioned by a judge? Are you looking for his dismissal, or are you looking for money? What are you looking for?
In addition to damages for the beatings, in fact, one of my clients has sustained permanent damage to his spine as a result of the beating. He's a 28-year-old man who is in now constant pain as a result of the beating that he received at the hands of Officer Murphy. So yes, we are going for damages, but in my mind, more importantly, I am not going to settle for anything less than Officer Murphy being excused from the not only the Capitola PD department, but any other law enforcement agency. I don't want to see this bait and switch situation that happens.
Happens frequently. I know
Catholic
that the guy
Church, kind of
Catholic Church is a time-honored practice.
Right.
Well, after all, you know, we want to keep the folks circulating. So
exactly.
it's recycling.
New material for their
Well, apparently the officer who shot dead the mentally I don't call him disabled, but
Not talking about John Dine. No. I'm talking about Charles Vaughn Jr. or Senior, who was shot on the
in Monterey
on the seaside on the roof of his house by one of, that was a police officer who had been discharged from another jurisdiction as a bad cop. Similarly, I guess some of the cops that got discharged in the Code Blue episode back in the early 80s that you actually went to court, at least as a witness, not as a witness, but as a spectator, where they went after homeless people and beat them up, and using the words Code Blue, come and beat them up. They were discharged from the Santa Cruz Police Department as Chief Peeny, the former chief, retired. We got Chief Bassett, and then, of course, Belcher. So these people are circulating. Is there any way to stop them from circulating? Has there been a case in the past?
There's a case even closer to home that people might be interested in, and that's Officer Lefevre. As far as I know, he's, after being excused from the Santa Cruz Police Department after beating up that woman and, well, not beating her up, but...
putting her in a pain compliance hold and threatening her the safety of her child, as I remember.
Exactly.
He was the cop that Steve Argue slugged and then served 7 months in jail for hitting.
Right. He is an officer that I had a previous case against. You know, it's really sad that they would rather not tarnish the image of these officers in a way that puts other citizens at risk.
Well, you know, maybe we could suggest that the police join the Catholic Church and become priests.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a little discipline for some of these kids might be appropriate. Instead of pedophilia, we'd have the spare the rod and spoil the child mentality here, which...
Well, the other thing that really is just gripes me no end, and I don't understand why the Taxpayers Association isn't more involved in these situations, is that the money that the city, both Santa Cruz and Capitola and the county, is putting out to defend these bastards.
Where is Lefevre now, do you know?
I don't know.
I think he's up in the East Bay in a police department up there, but I'm not sure where.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's our taxpayer dollar. You know, if the city council wanted to mess around with their own money and, you know, and defend these guys, that you know, to me, that's one thing. But, you know, they're putting out huge amounts of money to private attorneys to defend these guys. In the Murphy cases, I've sued the city as well because, obviously, the city has just not, you know, had any, in spite of all of the notice they've had of all of these cases, in spite of the fact that the district attorney has been refusing to even prosecute any case that comes across their desk with a 148, a resisting arrest from this Officer Murphy, they've just been stubborn and maintained that there's nothing wrong. I mean, this last case that I filed, the young boy who was beaten, and you know, the problem with these cases is that there was a reason why Officer Murphy was after all of these people. So, you know, I have an uphill struggle in terms of the fact that, you know, two of the cases were DUIs and one of them was a stolen car case. And this last case was a stolen car case. You know, he was in vehicular pursuit of this kid, and the kid stopped and ran initially, and then stopped in a driveway of a residence and put his hands up very visibly with Officer Murphy right in front of him where he could see, and said, "I give up," at which point Officer Murphy charged him, knocked him to the ground. And when my client kind of looked up at him, he started punching him in the face and embedded his tooth in his lip. And
he was teaching him a good lesson, Kate.
Yeah. Well, this kid, you know, was afraid, and he decided he wasn't going to do anything. He didn't even tell anybody about it. But the resident that lived in the home where the driveway where this happened observed everything that happened and complained to another Capitola police officer, said, "Hey, you got to take that to Internal Affairs."
And how is Internal Affairs in Capitola?
How is it in any police department I've ever filed an Internal Affairs complaint? You know,
Infernal Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Kate, you've been taking these cases to secure justice for victims of police violence for how long?
21 years.
And what's your success rate?
Success rate is a tough thing to determine because generally these cases settle.
How many cases would you estimate you've taken?
God.
More than 100?
No idea.
More than 1,000?
More than 100.
And would you say that 50% of these cases settle, or?
I would say that more than that amount of cases settle, and for one very good reason. You know, I don't have the resources, unfortunately, to finance these cases the way they really need to be financed in terms of hiring outside experts and police practices who, you know, they charge somewhere around $300 to $400 an hour to testify. And of course, they have their experts all lined up because they've got, you know, our taxpayer dollar that they're using to support these cases.
Mm-hmm.
So generally, I just don't have the resources, nor do any of my clients, because, you know, obviously they're being picked on because they're not in a position to fight back. So that's the general, you know, reason, and it's sad, and I hate to, you know, I'm being perfectly honest about it.
Okay, what of those that do go to trial, what percentage do you win?
I have not lost one.
Wow, and how many cases would you say you've tried?
Over the years, probably, at least a couple a year.
And so that's about 40 cases?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're talking police violence cases exclusively or generally?
No, not just police violence cases. I take, you know, First Amendment cases like yours, and, you know, there are other types of cases that I take. All of them constitutionally based. So,
Now, for those who don't know much about federal court, is it about a year before a case goes to trial or longer?
Longer, usually. It's at least a year. Depends on the nature of the case and the extent of discovery, and then I've got trials lined up right now. I'm scheduling trials in June, July of 2003 now.
And these are civil trials. They aren't criminal trials. You're actually trying to get damages, some order from the court about reforming the practices of the police department or stopping a pattern of constitutional violation?
Exactly.
And, exactly. Well, let's look at the current case. You apparently have served the city and Sergeant Baker, and I guess the city council and members were individually served at city council on March 26th on my case, which is a case I'd like you to perhaps talk a little bit about. If things went as normal and let's say the city refuses to settle and we refuse to settle, or either of us refuse to settle, when would it go to trial approximately?
Oh, we're probably talking a year.
And this would be at a federal court where each of the city council members involved would be obliged to appear?
Well, let me take that back. We're asking for injunctive relief in your case, which means we're asking the court to declare these so-called rules of decorum unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
So we can, in fact, request a hearing on that issue, not the damage issue, but the issue of the constitutionality on an expedited basis. So that could be heard in the next month or so.
And is that, I guess that depends on when you have your documentation in, because I guess we are trying to show that it's not just me that's being hauled away for
right.
Lifting my hand up in a Heil Krone silent salute, but it's more a series of behavioral practices by not just Mayor Krone, but Mayor Sugar, Mayor Fitzmaurice in the past that have essentially kind of chilled the constitutional rights of those attending city council meetings?
Absolutely. As you know, in my opinion, I said it the other night at the council meeting, but you know, they have taken an arrogant position of being above those that they serve. I mean, part of being a public servant is the fact that you got to sit there and take criticism. You know, I mean, it's happened to me, and it's not that I liked it. It's just that I, you know, clearly understood that you know, all these people had the right to you know, call me whatever they felt like calling me, as long as it wasn't obscene, which. You know, I guess under certain circumstances, if what they're doing is obscene, I guess that would be called for. But yeah. So it's just a matter of them understanding that they need to sit and listen, even though they don't want to hear. In fact, it's more important that they listen to things they don't want to hear than that they listen to things they do want to hear.
You know, you've been around Santa Cruz now, what, for 2 decades at least?
Coming up, yeah, 26 years.
And you've actually taken a number of cases locally to court involving civil rights for homeless activists. I know in 1996, 97... Well, I think in 96, weren't you involved in the City Hall lockdown case?
Yeah, I was involved in the efforts to get the law declared, the camping ban, or the sleeping ban declared unconstitutional.
And that was the next year with Dan Hopkins.
Right.
And you've been, you know, you've been advising homeless people on how to proceed. Why is this case different?